Yeah, we're going to talk about the idea of the brachos of Yaakov and Esau. And let's start with the first question, and that is, apparently Yitzchak wanted to give a bracha to Esau, and Rivka understood that Yaakov is more deserving of the brachos. So the question is, was Yitzchak wrong? What type of thought did Yitzchak have to feel that Esau is more deserving? So there are a number of explanations that Mefarshim give. The first is the Abarbanel, not the first chronologically, but the most basic. And that is the Abarbanel basically says Yitzchak was a victim of duplicity. We are told, for example, that Esav used to ask very religious-sounding questions. How do you take off Truma and Miser from salt and water, in which there is no chiyuv of Truma and Miser? Esav, in reality, had the mitzvah of Kivud Aviyim, and Chazal don't call him hypocritical. They say that that was a mitzvah that he did fulfill. And also, the Abarbanel makes the point that because of Yitzchak's great, great holiness, his great sanctity, Yitzchak didn't understand hypocrisy or duplicity. If you looked like a tzaddik, you were a tzaddik. Yitzchak, in fact, that's the meaning allegorically. Chazal say Yitzchak was blinded by the tears that the angels shed at the Akedah. So in a metaphorical way, we interpret that to mean the experience of being a korban to God blinded him to the sordid realities of hypocrisy and duplicity. So according to that interpretation, the Abarbanel learns that Yitzchak simply thought Esau was a tzaddik. But the problem is the Abarbanel seems to be contradicted by the verses themselves. Because if you remember, when Yaakov impersonates Esav and has the skins of the goats around his arms, and Yitzchak feels them. So Yitzchak says, the famous verse, Hakol kol Yaakov, the voice is the voice of Yaakov. Hayadayim, the hands are the hands of Esav. So Rashi says, what does it mean, the voice is the voice of Yaakov? Not as we think, that they, you know, it sounds like Yaakov, because Yaakov and Esav had the same voice, Chazal say. But rather, it's the voice of Yaakov because he mentions the name of Hashem. Yaakov had mentioned that Esav doesn't mention the name of Hashem. So, in other words, Yitzchak understands Esav doesn't mention the name of Hashem. So Yitzchak knows Esav is not so great. Moreover, right before this Maisa with the brachos, it says that Esav took from the daughters of Yishmael to be his wife, two daughters of Yishmael, two descendants of Yishmael, and the pasuk says this was a source of bitterness to Yitzchak and Rivka. So Yitzchak is clearly aware that Esav married a Canaanite, not a Canaanite, but a Yishmaelite woman, and this was very bitter, so he knew, right? So to say that Yitzchak was simply fooled seems to be contradicted by these two ideas, Hakol Kol Yaakov, and the fact that Esav married Bas Yishmael. All right, so a second explanation is that Yitzchak saw in Esav a greater potential. Because remember, Avram Avinu, Hashem's original covenant with Aravos is, of course, the bris, the covenant that he makes with Avram Avinu, right? That's the covenant that he makes with the Avos. And Avram Avinu was a person who spread godliness throughout the world. Avram was Makariv people, all right? Now, Yitzchak was more retiring. Yitzchak had the koach of inner strength and consolidation. So Yitzchak looks at Esav, and he sees someone who's more like Avram. Yaakov is more like Yitzchak. He's passive. He sits in the tents. He's Yoshev Oel. So he thinks that the great spreader of Torah, theoretically, can be Esav, if Esav gets the correct brachos and the correct tools. So in some ways, and again, I pointed out, in some ways Esav had many, many great strengths. And Yitzchak thought these strengths could be harnessed for Ruchnius, for the bris, for the covenant. And therefore, he wanted more of an Avraham-like figure, which he mistakenly, apparently, saw this in Esav. But, number one, this doesn't answer a lot. In other words, all of this might explain only one question, and that is, why did Yitzchak want to give the bracha to Esav? But why did Rivka engage in deception, and how can a bracha be chal on deception? I mean, if Yitzchak thinks blessing a man called Esav, the fact that it happens to be Yaakov standing before him, that's not going to give Yaakov the brachas. So here, let me share with you a shadow of the Malbim. The Malbim has a very beautiful, actually the Malbim says some of it, Rav Hirsch says some of it, they all kind of converge into a very similar explanation. If you look at the Chumash, what happens is Yitzchak gives a certain bracha to Yaakov when he thinks he's Esav, but then when he discovers that he's Yaakov, he gives him another bracha, a different bracha. And the Malbim says Yitzchak Avinu always knew that Yaakov is the heir, the inheritor of the covenant of Abraham and the spiritual heritage of this special nation with a connection to Hashem is going to go through Yaakov. And that is why if you look at the bracha that he thought he was giving to Esav, it is only a bracha of Eilam Hazeh. It is only a bracha of Gashmias. It is not a bracha of Ruchnias. What is the bracha? It's a relatively short bracha. V'yitein l'cha Elokim mital ha-shamayim u'mishmanei ha-oretz. Hashem should give you from the dew of the heavens and the produce of the ground. Yavducha amim, may nations serve you. V'yishtachavu l'cha liyumim, and nations will bow down to you. Havei gevir li'achacha, may you be mighty above your brethren, etc. That's all it is. So the Malbim points out, all of that are brachos of gashmias, brachos of lands, brachos of productivity, brachos of dominance and control. It is only after Yitzchak realizes that Yaakov, that the Esav is Yaakov, he then says, may Hashem bless you and give you the blessings that he gave to my father Abraham. So the Malbim says the following. The so-called Birchas Avais means the bracha that you should be the Mamala Makam of Abraham, Yitzchak always intended to give to Yaakov. But Yitzchak loves Esav. Yaakov and Esav, after all, are twins. And Yitzchak knows that Esav has become a Rasha. And Yitzchak knows that Esav is Yetzi L'Tarbis Ra. And Yitzchak realizes that there was a mistake. I think I mentioned a few days ago that Yitzchak and Esav were raised, I'm sorry, that Yaakov and Esav were raised the same way, 18 hours in the Beis Midrash. V'yigdalu hana'arim. And Rav Hirsch says that was the shorish of the mistake, because Esav needed time to play basketball and baseball and jog and everything else. And when you try to make Esav into a masmid who learns all day, he's going to become rebellious. So Yitzchak is looking for a way in which he could salvage Esav. So he contemplates, the Malbim says, a notion of a division of labor. Just like much later we have the Yisachar Zevulun partnership, where Yisachar learns Torah, and Zevulun through his calmness supports Torah, although Zevulun has to learn too. And as a result, Zevulun gets his Eilam Haba by the help that he gives Yisachar. So the Malbim, so Yaakov Avinu felt, maybe the brachas of Eilam Hazeh, specifically Eretz Yisrael, maybe it's better that Yaakov doesn't get it. If Yaakov and his descendants have to run a country, run a nation, they have to have lawyers and doctors and accountants and farmers and run political parties and run elections and take care of garbage, that's going to take away Yaakov's ability, the future generation's ability, to focus on learning. So the cheshbon is, give it to Esav. Let Esav have the political rallies. Let Esav have the societies. Let Esav dig the ditches and drain the swamps, because he's energetic, he's activist, he's a person who likes to get things done. That's what a hunter is. You want to do things. And in that way, Yitzchak had a cheshbon. It's good for Yaakov by freeing him from the challenges of Eilam Hazeh, and it's good for Esav because it will give him a chance to use his gashmiyistika inclinations for the benefit of a goal that will get him Eilam Haba. You see the Malbim's cheshbon. So it was Yitzchak. So Yitzchak knew who Esav was, but Yitzchak felt Esav should get the brachas of Eilam Hazeh, because this would create the equivalent of a Yisachar Zevulun partnership, where Esav will use his kochos to help Yaakov, and Yaakov will be freed of the challenges of dealing with the inyanim of Eilam Hazeh. It's mamish a pre Yisachar Zebulun type partnership. And in fact, this explains the idea of the hunting, because Yitzchak knows Esav is not a spiritual person. Yitzchak knows that Esav is a man of the world, but he wants Esav to understand that even worldly activities can be used for spiritual pursuit. So he's telling Esav, yeah, Esav, you're a hunter, I know. But you can hunt and honor your parents, you can do kibbut aviyim, meaning use your physicality to serve Hashem. Remember, Chazal say, Esav was such an expert hunter that he could actually shecht, he could shoot a bird and the arrow would go through the neck, or shoot a deer, etc. So it'd be kosher deer, right? Deer is a kosher animal, and some of the fancy restaurants in New York, they give venison. I never had it, but I don't know, but I haven't seen venison in Israel, but you know, Israel is much less meat than the U.S. Okay, so this is Yitzchak's cheshbon. So the cheshbon is a much deeper cheshbon than you would think, because in fact the spiritual blessing was always intended for Yaakov, but Yitzchak wanted to give Esav, the physical blessing. Rivka's insight, and maybe because this may be combined with the Abarbanel, that because Rivka came from a house of hypocrisy, her father was Laban, duplicity, and because she was more involved in the day-to-day running of the household, she knew that it's too little too late, that Esav in point of fact would never have used, will never use, his spirit, his physical resources to help Yaakov, and therefore it's necessary for Yaakov to be given the physical resources himself in terms of Eretz Yisrael and the Gashmias. So the question then becomes, so why does she employ artifice? Why does she not just talk to Yitzchak about it? Well, number one, perhaps she couldn't convince Yitzchak. Perhaps Yitzchak is his shita, and she has to trick him, although we'll see how this tricking works. And she can't just talk to him. Now, the Netziv says something that's very quite amazing, and again, it's one of those verklichs that I would not say by myself, and I would be criticized for saying it. So I always have to be sure that, you know, it's the Netziv, it's not me. The Netziv says that the relationship of Yitzchak and Rivka was very different than the relationship of Avram and Sarah. Avram and Sarah functioned on a very egalitarian plane, a kind of equal plane. Sarah was a co-master of the house. When she saw a problem, she was open about it, she is explicit, and Avram often had to respond according to her understanding of the situation. Yishmael's causing a lot of trouble. She says to him openly, get rid of him. He's going to drag down Yitzchak. Avram doesn't know what to do, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, listen to your wife, she knows better. The Netziv says that Rivka had a sense of awe about Yitzchak. She felt reverence towards him. She did not feel equal, and she did not feel she could approach him. Number one, Yitzchak was literally very otherworldly. Yitzchak was a korban. We don't even know what that means exactly, but he was kind of, he had 1 foot in Olam Haba, maybe 1.5 feet in Olam Haba. Moreover, even the fact of their great difference in age, because in a sense, Yitzchak on some level was more of a father than a husband on some level, because according to Chazal, once again, Rivka was only 3 years old when she married Yitzchak, who was already 40 years old. 37, you could actually be a grand, depending on yourself, sometimes you can be under 40 and be a grandfather, depending on how early you got married, right? If you get married at 18, and your child gets married at 18, so when you're 36 years old, you can already have a grandchild. Wow. So some of us don't get married by then, but okay. It's good to have a head start when it's child, you know. So, the Netziv says that Rivka was using the only means she had at her, in her employ. But Rav Hirsch, the Malbim, they had the following idea. Part of Yitzchak's fear is, number one, he doesn't want Yaakov to have all the distractions of Olam Hazeh. But also, he feels that Olam Hazeh will spiritually destroy Yaakov, because Olam Hazeh is a world of sheker, a world of duplicity. Yaakov will be cheated. Yaakov doesn't, in other words, Yitzchak is projecting onto Yaakov his own issues, that he won't be able to, you know, negotiate with this nation and that nation. So Rivka is devising a test to show that Yaakov is capable of duplicity. He says, you think Yaakov doesn't understand Sheker? Look at the fact they could even fool you. In other words, it's a retrospective thing where once, so it's not that it's a magic thing, Yitzchak gave the brachas to Esav and Yaakov got them. But rather, once Yitzchak realizes that Yaakov is capable of Sheker, he understands that Yaakov understands Sheker. Now he sees that this is worthy of the bracha. Okay? Rav Hirsch even says another little twist. He says, in a way, Yaakov really isn't such a great liar because Yaakov continues to have the cold Yaakov. Well, why doesn't he disguise his manner of speaking? He actually says that he wanted Yitzchak to find out in the middle. That Yitzchak knew this was Yaakov, but then he realized, my son is showing me he knows how to do this act. And he knows how to get away with it if he had to. In other words, so in that sense, it wasn't even a deception in the final analysis, because in the middle of the story, Yitzchak realized. Okay, that's a little bit of a daichik in the psukim and the like. So this is the explanation of the Malbim on this whole inyan of bracha. But again, let's ask this question, and that is, people still, you know, okay, the Malbim explains there wasn't a full deception, but if you learn there was a deception, people still say, gee, what type of man is Yaakov? You know, Yaakov tricks Esav. Well, it doesn't trick, but he, by withholding food, if you say, he kind of coerces Esav into selling the Bechora, and then he tricks Esav. And you have to know that you really feel sorry for Esav here, because Esav shows up tired after doing exactly what his father asked him to do. And he says to his father, is there only one bracha, my father? And, you know, Yitzchak makes something up, so to speak, another bracha, etc. But you feel at that moment, you know, your heart goes out to Esav. Esav cries. And so what's interesting is, the Medrash actually says the following idea. It's a very sobering idea. And that is, it's not so clear that Yaakov benefited from this. Because the bracha that he did obtain was that he will be a master over his brother. Well, for how much of Jewish history have we been masters over Esav, and how much of our history has Esav been masters over us? Esav destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. This galus is called the galus of Esav. The Medrash actually says, because Yaakov deceived Esav, Yaakov became a victim of the deception of Laban, and ultimately, Yaakov became a victim of the 22 years that Yosef was taken from him, in which Yaakov believed that Yosef was killed. And the Medrash makes the point that which you acquire by deception and fraud, you will suffer an equivalent or worse deception or fraud. And the ultimate brachas will not be mekoyim until Yemosa Mashiach. That's what we say in Oz Yashir, which is from the Pasuk in Zechariah every day. V'olu Moshiim Bahar Tzion Lishpot Es Har Esav. Right? Moshiim means there will be savers who will come from Yerushalayim, Har Tzion, to judge the mountains of Esav. Har Esav is the area of the mountains of Esav. And then, V'hayisa Hashem Hamlucha, Hashem's kingdom is going to be established. V'haya Hashem Lamelech Al Kol Ha'aretz, Bayomahu Ye Hashem Echad Shmo Echad. But it hasn't been Mekoyim yet now. Moreover, the Chazal were so attuned to Lashonos. This is before there was a computer. It's amazing. Now we do computer things to find equivalent phrases. Chazal, that's every nuance. When Esav comes in and he discovers that Yaakov took the brachos, so the Torah has the Lashon, Vayizak Za'oka Gedola Umara. He screamed a loud and bitter scream. Vayizak za'aka gedola umara. Chazal note, again without computer, that there's only one other place in Tanakh where this exact phrase is used. And it is used in Megillas Esther when Mordechai hears about the evil decree of Haman. Mordechai, Vayizak za'aka gedola umara. The Medrash connects it. Because Haman is from Amalek. Amalek is the grandson of Esav. Amalek is the grandson of Esav. Because of the Za'aka Gedola Umara that Yaakov caused Esav, Esav's descendant, Haman, caused Yaakov's descendant, Mordechai, by Yizak Za'aka Gedola Umara. But what's the meaning of all of this? I mean, after all, is the suggestion that Yaakov shouldn't have done it? Is the suggestion that he should have let Esav get the bracha? In other words, if we're saying that Yaakov and all Bnei Yisrael are punished for this, is there a suggestion that somehow they were wrong? So Rav Chaim Shmulevitz says, no, that's not the pshat. Rather, there's even maybe a more disturbing lesson to be learned here. Even if you are 100% justified in what you do, and even if you have to do what you do, when you hurt another person, it will come back to bite you in some way. It is a law of spiritual nature. And justification has nothing to do with it. For example, let's take in the physical realm. Let's say a baby falls into a fire. God forbid. And I jump into the fire and I rescue the baby. Did I do the right thing? Yes. Did I do the good thing? Yes. Did I do the noble, courageous thing? Absolutely. And my reward in Olam Haba is going to be great. But in the absence of Hashem doing an open Nes Nigla, which sometimes happens but often doesn't, the fact that what I did was so wonderful does not protect me from playing with fire. Now that's obvious to us. That unless Hashem does a miracle like Avraham Bior Kastim, there is no concept that because you did a good thing, you're not going to get hurt with your encounter with the physical elements of the world. Zot Rav Chaim, there's an equivalent spiritual law. And that is, the pain cause comes back to us. And yes, everything Yaakov did was right and proper and emes. But it still means he's going to suffer for it. And we're going to suffer for it. Now that's important because that does mean that before you decide, let's say, or you know, to embarrass somebody, to hurt somebody, so we make cheshbon as well as l'shem shamayim, it's a good thing, okay, that's fine. But better think twice, because this is not going to immunize you from a certain amount of pain and suffering. So if you have to do it, you have to do it, but when you don't have to do it, just don't just give yourself the benefit of the doubt, say, I'm acting with Shem Shemayim. Right, so that's the thing. Actually, in moral philosophy, Lahavdalah, there's a similar idea. They call it even justifiable actions can leave what is called a moral trace upon the soul, meaning to say, yeah, you're doing the right thing, but because there's a secondary effect of hurting somebody, there is a bit of a blemish on you. That doesn't mean you don't do it. But it does mean that the consequences to your soul are real, and therefore things will happen. Now, sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us a promise the other way. For example, it says by Ir HaNidachas, right? What is Ir HaNidachas? A city that worships Avodah Zarah, a majority of the city. And the Torah says a very strict punishment. In the time of the Beis HaMikdash, you destroy the whole city and you even burn the property. Of course, it's interesting. It's a machlokas. According to one opinion, because Chazal even then tried to make it easy, if there's even one mezuzah in the city, you save the whole city. You don't kill the city. Now, that doesn't help everybody, though, because the individuals still get killed because they're idol worshippers. it saves the property. It saves the property, essentially. But it doesn't become your nitachas. You don the people as yechidim. What did they say? There was, the head of the Turi Karta, the founder of the Turi Karta, was actually a very great rabbi, Rav Amram Blau. I don't know if you've heard of him. Rav Amram Blau was the very colorful figure. He died around 25 years ago, 30 years ago. Yeah.
Was the Turi Karta?
Oh, okay. The Turi Karta, these guardians of the city, they're the small group of zealous people who believe that the state of Israel is illegal and illicit, and you're not allowed to have a state until the coming of Mashiach. Mm. They don't pay taxes. I don't know why the government... Whatever. The government doesn't bother them, basically, simply because it would be more trouble than it's worth.
They're scared.
But they're also scared. Yeah, that's true. It's very hard to fight back. By the way, Turi Karta told Osara and all these other movements. If you looked at it in Turi Karta, he wulldn't look any different than the Toldos Aron, but the Turi Karta is a small faction within, let's say, Toldos Aron, a small faction. In fact, the whole movement called the Turi Karta now is around 100 families. You know, that's about it. But they're well-funded in the sense that they have newspapers and websites. You know, they espouse their philosophy in different places.
It's quite funny that they have a website.
They do have a website.
It's a bad website.
Yeah. It's a website about, against Zionism. Now let me point out that modern Turi Karta is kind of an insane group because they go to Ahmadinejad and they deny the Holocaust. You know, they're a little nuts. But the theological foundations are not so crazy. If you go back to the 1920s and 30s, before the State of Israel, now, there were many Gedolim that quoted the same ideas, that we shouldn't have a state till Mashiach. This was not a crazy idea. This was a debated idea. And I'll tell you the truth, people who read the Satmar Rebbe's writings, Satmar Rebbe was a head of the Turi Karta, are very impressed with, the case that he makes. He makes a strong case with Makoros from Chazal. And everything else. But the head of the Turi Karta in Eretz Yisrael was a Rav Amram Blau. And again, really crazy. When Rav Amram Blau's wife had cancer, he wouldn't allow her to go to Hadassah Hospital because that's a government-funded hospital. They had to go to an Arab hospital in East Jerusalem, whatever. This is crazy, crazy things. But be this may, Rav Amram Blau had a brother, also a chashuv of a person, Rav Moshe Blau. And Rav Moshe Blau was also an askan, he was involved in communal affairs, but he worked with the Agudas Yisrael, which it's a Haredi party, but they worked with the government. So Rav Amram says, you can't have a state of Israel, there are Rishoyim, you can't participate. Rav Moshe Blau tried to work for the benefit of Am Yisrael within the system. So Rav Moshe Blau once said, the difference between me and my brother is, let's say we had an era nidachas. So I would run to put up a mezuzah before they wipe out the city. My brother, if there would be a mezuzah, he would take it down, not to desecrate the mezuzah. that was the difference. Himself and his brother. Do you try to put up the mezuzah or try to take down the mezuzah? When it's an era nidachas. Okay.
Smooth.
Yeah. But being as it may, the Torah says, and the reason I'm bringing this up is that the Orach Chaim is an interesting comment. The comment says, when you wipe out the city, which is really a supreme act of self-genocide, you're destroying Jews, city, the Torah says, V'nasan l'cha rachamim, Hashem will give you mercy, v'richamecha, and He will show you mercy. So the Orach Chaim says, there seems to be a repetition. What is Nasan Lecha Rachamim? And what is Richamecha? So he says a beautiful thing. Richamecha means Hashem will show you mercy even though you did something cruel because you had to do it. But Nasan Lecha Rachamim is different. Because there's always a danger that a person who engages in cruelty becomes a cruel person. So the Torah is promising you that if you kill the city L'shem Shamayim, you will still keep your faculty of Rachamim. You will not become corrupted. You will not become debased. So that's kind of an exception. What we're saying is normally when you hurt other people, it affects you. Yerah Nidachas is a case where the Torah promised you that it will not have a negative effect. But in the case of Yaakov and the Brachos, it very definitely did. So that's an important thing to keep in mind, that the Brachos of Yitzchak have not fully been Mekoyim. Now maybe in modern times, the return of Am Yisrael to Eretz Yisrael, there's been a partial kiyum. Again, not like the Turi Karta would say, but still, obviously it's a very, very partial kiyum. You know, it's crazy when people, I mean, there are people in Dati Leumi communities, you know, some segments that actually say, you know, they're from people, they're religious people. They, you know, why do we need a tishaba? We have Yerushalayim. Well, you know, it's very, very obvious that when you're davening by a wall, a bunch of stones, a wall that is the outer perimeter of the Temple Mount, which is inhabited by mosques and everything else, that, you know, that's not Geula. I mean, of course, we were so happy when we got the Kosel. But what is the Kosel? The Kosel is a Beis HaMikdash by being closer to it. But it's a destroyed Beis HaMikdash. Right? So, you know, we still need Tisha B'Av. You know, we hope it'll be the, you know, well, we hope that we won't have it this year, but, you know, this coming year, but, or this year. But, if things don't change, we certainly will have to, we'll have to have it even now. Yeah.
So, I mean, this system of, and lahavdil, and for lack of a better word, almost karma that the Malvin is describing,
yeah.
Right? Midah k'neged midah doesn't play into it so much, because, I mean, what Esav has done to, I mean, if you look at, like, sort of Western society's oppression of Am Yisrael,
yeah,
it's been a more
severe. Yes, it's not a midah k'neged midah, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu judges Am Yisrael by a very, very strict level of din. The Torah itself says that it is like a father disciplining a child. Now, imagine this, you know, if my neighbor's child, you know, runs into the street, you know, I may, you know, stop him or tell him not to, etc. But I'm not going to, you know, run after him and hit him and everything else. I'm not going to lawsuit them. But if it's my own son, I'm going to be stricter. And the strictness comes out of my love. I care so much that I'm going to intervene. Now, Israel is a little different. You know, even in America, if you go back, you know, 50 years ago, you know, the neighbors used to kind of, everybody was a co-parent, and the communities were very different then. You know, you were misbehaving, so the neighbor would, like, you know, take you in, give you a spanking or whatever it is. But today, it's somebody else's kid. I don't really care. You know, it's not my business. But when it's my child's, I care. So as a result, Bnei Yisrael often get judged by a much, much harsher standard. Precisely because they're Hashem's beloved children. All human beings are made in God's image. In God's image, Bnei Yisrael are God's children. That's a different level. Or maybe firstborn children is a lesson there. That's kind of a different level. Okay, so these are things to think about. Now, one of the lessons, though, of Rivka being correct that Yaakov deserves the brachos is the reminder that it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's plan for us that we take the ruchnius of Torah and we be able to apply it to everyday life. In other words, instead of saying, let Esav handle society, the message is Yaakov needs to handle society, and that's an important thing. How that dovetails with Kolel, you know, it's an interesting question. But I'll tell you that, you know, the first chief rabbi of the state of Israel, you know, after 1948, was not Rav Kook. Rav Kook died in the 1930s. But it was Rav Yitzchak HaLevi Herzog. And Rav Herzog was a phenomenal Talmud Chacham. And Rav Herzog worked very well with many Gedolim, many what you call Haredi Gedolim. Although some Haredi Gedolim, I mean, the Brisk Rav didn't like him, except that Brisk Rav was a very big zealot, but Rav Yitzchak Zalman Meltzer, there were Shlomo Zalman, you know, there were Gedolim who, Rav Elyashiv, had tremendous respect, covered for Rav Elyashiv was much younger then, but he had tremendous covered for Rav Herzog. And Rav Herzog had a very ambitious project that was not fully developed. Rav Herzog wanted to write a code of halacha about how to manage a modern state in accordance with halacha. Meaning, how do you operate a police department, a fire department, defense forces in terms of halacha? Because the way it kind of works now is we're just soimich that those mechallelei Shabbos will take care of it for us. Okay, you know, I'll do my thing, and, you know, they'll do their thing, and, you know, it's like Goyim, you know, doing stuff for me, so I'll have these Jews doing stuff for me. But Rav Herzog said that's not optimal, because if HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted us to establish a land and a society, he wanted us to create a government and a society that can follow the laws of the Torah. So there has to be ways. Now, in halakhic literature, we don't have a lot about it. Number one, halakhic literature doesn't deal with so many modern problems because it's old. And number two, because we were in Gullus for all of this time, most of halachic literature focuses on individual problems. like, what do I do? If something happens, my milchik spoon falls into my whatever it is. But halachic literature does not address so much modern societal problems. Even to this day, there's not a tremendous amount of this. So he started writing, and he had other rabbanim writing various manuals, halachic manuals. How do you run a police department? How do you run a ministry? What can remain open? What happens when things have to be closed? You know, what do you do, etc.? What's called pikuach nefesh in a modern society? And what's not called pikuach nefesh? And the like. And the goal was that this theoretically, now he knew that not everybody in the state was going to be religious, but he wanted to create a situation where theoretically, if everybody was religious, the country could still run and compete in the world and be successful. So this was only partially realized. There was a Dayan, Rabbi Eliezer Waldenberg, who was he died just a few years ago in his 90s. He was known as the Tzitz Eliezer. He wrote like 30 volumes of Shelos HaTshuvos, which are always in print. But he wrote an earlier book that was not had been out of print for many years called Hilchos Medina, in which he tried to apply halacha to a modern government. And that was out of print for many, many years. Some say intentionally out of print. People didn't want that type of book to be out. It was reprinted shortly after his death. The family finally, you know, pushed it through. But of course, you know, even that's already out of date in the sense that he wrote this in the early 1950s. So the technologies have changed, and you have to, you know, deal with it that way. But all of this goes back to the idea of a validation of Rivka Imenu, that Yaakov needs to have the Gashmias and not just the Ruchnias, and to bring the Ruchnias into the Gashmias, right? That would be the elevator. Okay, you all have a good Shabbos, and tonight there's a big thing, right? Big Shindig tonight. Okay.
So does the Tzitz Eliezer in Hilchos suggest like how to run a police department?
Yeah. Now again, as I say, it's out of date because it's already, yeah. It's a big safer, kind of 500 pages, but even so, the truth is, you would need to really do this project. You would need detailed manuals for every department of government. Now, the one place where we have done this for hospitals. So, for example, Shari Tzedek, it's only one hospital. It's a hospital that runs 100%, it's a very good hospital, that runs 100% according to halacha. So they've covered every little detail, like how do you open, a package of bandages, you know, like every single procedure that is done in a hospital, they have worked out halachically. Of course, they use a lot of goyim too. I mean, that's the simplest thing, but they worked out. So we do have. So that's the one prototype of a step by step by step by step. But as I say, you know, most government agencies don't have that type of at all. Okay, we'll see you later.
Thanks so much.